to me a little bit.
The Tokyo Express was a group of destroyers would come down at nighttime from up in the New Georgia Islands, which were north of the Solomons, would come down and would shell the beaches and would also sometimes offload some additional Japanese to fight the Marines who were fighting on Guadalcanal at the time. And so they decided that one night what they would do. We had lost enough cruisers and destroyers up there in those battles at that time, and we were winning the battle for Guadalcanal, so they decided they wouldn't send any more cruisers or battleships or anything up there like that up there to take a chance when they're getting beat up by torpedoes, Japanese torpedoes, things like that. So they decided on this particular night that they were going to send us in, and we were going to lay a minefield of floating mines. Floating mines across in front of the. We were going to just see they were coming in this way, and we were going to lay this minefield across in front of them like this. And we did. We got up there, and we got it just as they were coming around Sable Island. We finished laying the minefield like that. So we didn't wait around. Because there were 20 of them. There were 20 Japanese destroyers came in, and they went in, and we got it. We know that we got one. We think we got two other destroyers that were in that group. And of course, when these things started happening, they thought there were submarines, PT boats, or whatever around there. So they left without doing any shelling or anything like that. They turned around and hightailed it back up to where they were supposed to be. So we got some Japanese destroyers that night, and that laying that minefield across in front of them. Then we stayed down there and did a lot of escorting back and forth between New Caledonia and there, and they decided that they would. We would invade the Russell Island, which was a little island, which was north of. Here was the Solomon Islands down here, like this, with Guadalcanal here and Florida, down to Tulagi over here. And about 20, 25 miles north of there was a little place called Russell Islands. And the Japanese were on that island. We knew they were still on the island, and so they decided to invade that place. So. We were going to escort them up there. What we're going to do is to do this at leave in the afternoon around 3 o'clock, and we would get up there and get up there at night around 8 or 9 o'clock at night time. And we had six or eight LCTs loaded with Marines, and we're going to take them, put them off there, and let them start begin the fight begin the fighting at nighttime with the Japanese there. There was a little inlet that went up into the place there, and my job was I was the chief engineer. At this time I was by this time I was the gunnery officer of the ship, and so they my job was to get off in the motor boat. And I was to lead these, be the navigator for getting these LCTs up this. It was a little river that came out of the mountains. I was thinking we're going to go up in there and get them to the place where they were supposed to be unloaded. I was to lead. And then had nothing but me and three sailors in this boat, a whaleboat.
We
went up in there leading these guys up in there. All I had was a Thompson submachine gun. Was all the only thing I was armed with. Was there, and so I was able to lead them in there, and we got them unloaded and what they were going to do, and there was no opposition or anything like that. And the thing that actually happened was that the Japanese were taking their guys off in submarines on the other end. Taking their guys off. At the same time we were landing on this side here like this, they were going off the other side. So there was no. So we had no opposition to the business of the landing. But it didn't make it any less scary.
Glad you didn't run into anyone.
Didn't know anything about that thing. So we got. We got them all positioned, and we did that then for the next several nights. We were escorting about six or eight LCTs up there and putting soldiers and their equipment and so forth on board there, and then we'd come back and come back So come back in the next morning and take another group back up at night. We're back and do a shuttle operation. I got all got the island occupied and everything went along fine. No problems there. But I was the guy who had to lead them up in there and keep them from running around. going up in that damn place there, which was no fun. I've got to go back and tell you a story about Midway.
Sure.
I forgot there. One of the other things we did before we battled Midway was is that there's French frigate shoals one place, and there's Curie Island, and there's Les Sand Reef. And a couple of other islands. So they're both east and west of the island of Midway. So about, I guess it was a week before Midway happened, they decided that they wanted these islands reconnoitered to see if there were any what they call Japanese coast watchers, which a submarine would come along and unload a guy with a radio, and he could be there, and he could observe ship movements, aircraft movements, and things like that back and forth around this island where he was. He couldn't see very far, but he was a forward listening post for them, and they thought that they had some people in these islands there, so they. They asked us to go and reconnoiter these islands. And so I was given the task of being the landing force officer, since I was the only Naval Academy officer on that time who'd had any much extensive training in infantry and that kind of thing like that. So I was made the landing force officer, and I was unmarried. I was married at the time. And midway before getting back to marry my wife, I was unmarried, so they sent me ashore to be in the boat. So we loaded up the boat with, I guess, this first island was east of Midway, and we loaded up the boat and put me offshore. Went down on this island was where the iguanu, the traders, had been. The iguanu is the dung from the birds, and that was fertilizer. And back in the day before we had the regular fertilizer, where these guys would get that stuff. They had several shacks were on this island. So we shelled the island from the destroyer. We shelled it, and they had some Marines from Midway came over and bombed the shacks. Didn't hit a damn one up. And we had bought some gasoline and some 5-gallon cans ashore with us. So when we landed and we got out like skirmishers landing in the infantry business and swept across the island.
Hang on. Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
And as we got on there, we started combing the island, see if we could find any traces of any Japanese who'd been there. And being the brave young Henson in charge, the guys wanted to show them what I was doing and so forth. I was the guy that told him when we'd come to one of these buildings, I would say, okay, you guys cover me now, and I'll go in and search the building, see what's in the building. Damn fool, I should have had one of them go in. I stay outside.
Right.
If they'd got me, they'd been left without any so-called leader or whatever you want to say there. I should have done that. Anyhow, I would go inside these houses. I think about three of them on there. And then when I'd go through and search the place, we'd come out and we'd torch the house, put some kerosene on it and torch the house and set the fire and burn it. And the last one I went into had some closets in it, and so I was going in to open the closet thing like that. And well, this one thing I was I had a Thompson 45, Thompson submachine gun, what I had there. And so as I was standing, I get ready to open this door. This door started moving like that, and so I just like. John Wayne with a gun there. I let that door have it there. And as I looked down, here came two goody birds, two albatrosses, walking out of that place like this, and walked out.
But someone had a good laugh outside, didn't it?
Oh, they had a real good laugh out of that. And So we finished up that one and got.
Did you find any sign of anyone being on the island?
Didn't find anything on that one. Then we went the next day. We went to went home that night, and I had not had the greatest ease of recruiting people to go with me that first day. But when we got back from the first day's run, where the pharmacist mate on board was given orders by the captain to give us some medicinal stores, and so we got each guy got one of these little miniature bottles of whiskey. And so when the next day when I got ready to go, I had all kinds of volunteers just standing in line.
I wanted
to go with the next day. We went on the next one. Went to Curie Island, which is west of Midway. Went to Curie Island, and we on this one there was no thing like. But we found evidences of a fire, and we found some rope and some things like that, which were evidence that someone had been there. We didn't know what it was or whose it was, anything like that. So we gathered up this stuff, and when we got back to Pearl Harbor after the battle, before we got back there, where we turned this stuff over to the intelligence people that we had found. I never knew what happened to it. I don't know whether anything ever came of that material that we had turned over to the intelligence people there or not. When we got back to Midwest, to turn it over to them. Anyhow, we had done our duty, and we got back and had no problems with anyone getting hurt or anything else like that on this particular thing. That was written up on one of a letter by this guy, William Kaufman, sent a letter to a shipmate, which I'll see if I can't remember to send you a copy of the letter he sent, which was a little excerpt about the fact that we had done this. That the first landings were not made on Guadalcanal, they were made on these islands out there. We did learn something about surf and about, which we did write up and tell them about going through surf. We had to go through surf to get to the Atmahe, and then the reefs that were there. We had to go through, and so that was an interesting and fine experience.
It was interesting on the Japanese reconnaissance. Were they able to intercept radio messages, figure out which islands these guys are on?
I don't think so. Yeah. I don't think that they did. At least I know nothing about that.
It struck me of interest.
Right. Would be interested to know that. I don't know whether they did or not. Whether there's anything in there or not. I know most of their work, of course, was in this thing called MAGIC, which they were the diplomatic messages were going back and forth between one of the, that was the main thing that they were doing. That MAGIC and PURPLE were the two things that they were doing most of their work on at that particular that time. I think that's where Layton. I mean, have you read or seen the Battle of Midway by the Miracle at Midway by this guy Prange, Prange?
No.
That would be a good one. Sometimes you have a chance to read it. It's a big, thick book, about that thick. He wrote At Dawn We Slept. He also wrote this book, Miracle at Midway. He talks about that breaking the codes.
Yeah, I've heard about it. Let's go forward again and back. You're doing escort work on the Prebo and helping them land, and that was through part of 43. How far did that run?
That business around Russell Islands only ran for a couple of weeks.
Only
a couple of weeks that business around Russell Island. We got all the Marines on board. It was only 20 miles or so north of Guadalcanal, and they had air cover and things like that. They was over there, so there was no need for us to do any patrolling or anything like that. And they supplied the place by these LCTs. After they got there, they knew there were no Japanese on the island and things like that. Well, then they would just send the LCTs up by themselves.
And then what was your next assignment then?
Well, I stayed there in Pearl Harbor. I mean, to stay there on the Preble for those years and up until June of 1943, and then I had put in for interesting enough. I put in for a couple of things that went along. There was a dispatch came out that said, not long after Pearl Harbor happened, dispatch came out saying all of the officers of the class of 40, 41 and 42, because 42 didn't get graduated in December. All the members of the class of 41 and 42 are to take physical exams for submarines, and those who are qualified, the report to the Bureau of Naval Personnel about this. So there were two of us. I was one ensign on board. It was Ensign Ward, who was out of the class of 42, had just reported aboard. And so we were the two that were ordered over to take our physical exams at the sub base there in on Pearl Harbor. I had a terrible cold. It was a really quite terrible. And I thought if we had to go into this tank business and take this pressure test over down to, I think it was 150 feet, I think it was something like that. We had to take it coming up from 150 feet in this pressure tank. I thought, boy, if I go over there, I won't pass this thing, because I don't want to serve submarines, so I don't want submarines, so I won't pass it. So went over there and take the exam, and lo and behold, both Ward and I passed the exam with flying colors. Well, in fact, my cold got better after I'd done this. And went back to the ship, and we sent the dispatch out that said, Ensign Jackson, Ensign Ward, took the exam. Both are physically qualified for duty in submarines. Ensign Ward is a volunteer. Ensign Jackson is not. Repeat, not a volunteer. So, of course, I didn't get ordered submarines.
So you didn't get?
I didn't get ordered submarines. Ensign Ward got ordered very shortly. Got ordered away to submarines. The other thing I did was is that I put in for going to flight training. I took the flight physical, and they said sent the word that Ensign Jackson is fully qualified for flight training, and so recommended. Within a couple of weeks, came back the business that I was Lieutenant JG by this time. I said, Lieutenant JG Jackson will be ordered to be the executive officer and navigator of the Preble within a very short time, and we need executive officers and navigators and destroyers as well as we need aviators, so therefore he will be retained over with the Preble. This must have been in late 1942, I guess, something like that. I forgot what the time frame was. Incidentally, I got promoted to JG. Lieutenant JG, I guess it was the 1st of June, something like that. It was before I was married, on June 26th. And then in December of 42, I was reported, I was promoted to full lieutenant. So that was really going up rather rapidly.
Right.
They said he's going to be the navigator and executive officer of a destroyer. And therefore, he would keep him on the furlough. So after they had done that to me, well, and then I guess it was in, I was now the navigator, the executive officer for the Preble. I put in for training and for education in gunnery, ordnance and gunnery, postgraduate course in ordnance and gunnery. And so you had to put in a second choice, and I put my second choice, I put in was engineering and marine engineering. So in due time, before June of 43 occurred, well, I got my orders to go back to report back to Annapolis to postgraduate school in engineering. When I got to Pearl Harbor, I met a man out of the class of 1935, a guy named Smokey Manning. Smokey had put in for engineering with his second choice as gunnery. And he was off of submarines. And so what he did was he and I sat there and we cooked up this scheme. Well, now, why don't we go back to Duper's back in Washington, D.C. and tell them that we want to swap. And flop these things. So here's a guy who wants to go to gunnery. Who's in engineering. The guy who wants to go to engineering, he was in gunnery. So let's swap the two of them. So we went back to, we flew back into Washington. We flew all the way back from Pearl Harbor back to San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And got on a plane, went to Washington, went into the Bureau of Naval Personnel and told them that we wanted to swap. We had these two sets of orders and we'd like to have these changed and swap. And the captain behind the desk there says, "Now look, young man," says, "you know what happened was, is you two guys were selected by a selection board. and says, we can't unilaterally change the selection board. You'd have to go and go to PGA school in the way that you are, unless that you would like to not have PGA education. Well, we just both decided that this was no time to turn down PGA education, so we went on. So I went to the engineering school, and he went to the Gundry school. That was a three-year education. Normally, they put me through in a year and a quarter, I guess it was, something like that. Back in 1944, I was ready to go back to the fleet. But that's why I went to graduate. I need to get a little bite of breakfast before we go there. So
Let me just finish up with one more question here. So after you got through engineering school, where did they send you?
Ordered me to be the assistant engineer of the USS Vincennes, the light cruiser CL-64. Vincennes.
V-I-N-C-N-N-E-S. And where was that stationed?
I was in the Pacific Fleet out in Hawes's fleet and in the Third Fleet. It was a member of that.
The Third Fleet. Okay. Well, it's probably good a stopping point as any.